There you go, a little humble pie for you. Oh, and Mahalo's Els, Bells, and DJ Shoots for that wonderful 2 hour of musical madness. And a big hawalelaha now to Thomas, celebrating his birthday here on the station that loves you, Kauai Community Radio. We've got 2 hours of live community radio. Maybe not so much 2 hours now, but a little more humble pie for you as well. We've got couple of subjects that we're going to be discussing, some prison reform and the criminal justice system during the first hour. In the second hour, we'll be talking about the proposal for the county council to consider, and we'll get clarity on this, putting it on the ballot for us to consider whether the county manager system would be more appropriate for Kauai than the strong mayor system that we employ now. So that's our 2 hours in front of us. We will be playing our top of the hour station business. I did hear something about a fun drive and our fall fun drive coming on up. Bingo, DJ Shoots, drive safe.
Thank you.
Mahalo nui for another good show. I'll let folks know that the out of the box special here is made possible by the good folks like you, our listeners, with the good people at Kalaheo Chiropractic and Ching Yung Village.
Kalaheo Wellness Center, natural pain relief services, providing gentle chiropractic acupuncture, therapeutic massage, nutritional wellness, postural training, cold laser therapy, and spinal decompression. Open Monday through Friday, now a second location in Kapa'a, 822-0711, or Southside Center at 332-5580, or online at kalaheochiropractic.com.
Ching Yung Shopping Village proudly supports Kauai's community radio by underwriting this program. Ching Yung, the heart of Hanalei. Mahalo, Jeff Culverhouse, for your support.
Yes, mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. That is the underwriters for this first hour. Without them, our program and our station is very difficult to think about having and happening, because we need your support, and you as a listener are one of our biggest sources of support. So thanks for joining us. I got one more to play, because this is what they tell me to do every now and then.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, board, volunteers, or underwriters.
There we go, and it was just whispered in my ear, I need to play this one too.
KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ Anahola, K284AL Haleiwa.
Oops, I think it was this one.
The lawful Hawaiian government's election will take place Saturday, September 12th. Polling places are the neighborhood centers in Kekaha, Kalaheo, Koloa, Lihue, and Kapa'a, plus the Anahola Clubhouse and Waipa Foundation. Polls are open at 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Hawaiian Nationals, it's your kuleana to vote.
There we go. So go out and vote. We got little hands-on action going on. I'm going to play a little precursor to our first subject matter with the criminal justice system and prison reform. And I'm staying with the humble pie theme that DJ Shoots and L left me with. We're evolving as we speak. Don't forget, at 6 o'clock, you will be part of the evolution. Uh-oh. There we go. 30 days in the hole.
Oh, yeah. Come on in, man. That's it. Yeah, right.
Chicago Green, walking down Red Lamb
There we go. So 30 days in a hole from Humble Pie. I'll try to put the brakes on that one. I've got a phone call coming up, and
I got it.
We'll see if that's our phone caller. Aloha, caller. You're on the air.
Hi. It's Blue.
Right on, Blue. Appreciate you joining us here on Out of the Box. I've got Alan Parashini. Parakini. Parakini in the booth with me. I invited Alan to talk story about another issue, but I do believe, Alan, you have a background with familiarity with law and the judicial system.
Yes, I do. I was a reporter for a very long time and was the public relations person for the L.A. court system for more than 8 years. So
go.
I know the ground a little bit.
A little bit. And so I didn't think it would be kind of a stretch to have you join us in this conversation. Blue contacted me a while back and had said she would like to talk about this as an issue for our community. And so, Blue Dukes, I'll let you introduce yourself and why this is an important issue. And thank you for joining us here on Out of the Box.
Well, thank you, Jimmy. I really appreciate you allowing us some airtime.
Oh, no worries.
And I live on the west side, and I'm a gardener. That's my work. And I'm not too close to the judicial realm of mm-hmm. things. I'm pretty humble, and you know, I've got my fingers in the dirt most of the time. However, I have a nephew. He's half Hawaiian, and he's 33 years old. He has a prior history of problems within the judicial system. Mm-hmm. I guess if that's what you want to call it. Last year, I think it was in 2013, actually, is when he got out of jail from mm-hmm. a long 10-year sentence. And he had 6 months period of a break, and after that he was picked up again. And he has ended up in this quagmire where he can't seem to extract himself, and I haven't been able to extract him either.
Mm-hmm.
I've provided him with as much support, and in doing so, I've seen some things that remind me that prison reform is way overdue. And now that President Obama is highlighting the problem, I think that, you know, it's time for a conversation to occur.
Mm-hmm.
In this country, we have 1 out of 31 adults apparently is incarcerated. There's something like 2.3 million people in jail. Obama says that we have 5% of the population in the world, and 25% of that population is incarcerated. That in itself should be a wake-up call for
right.
people.
Something's up with that.
Right. We are, you know, a very developed country, and we have the most incarcerated people. So, you know, there are certain things that have been legislated in the country which are creating and exacerbating this situation. There are some people who are going to be calling in, and they can probably talk and address that better than I can. But I did see some things firsthand that were extremely disturbing to me. I found that not only was my nephew dealing with this, but it kind of overflowed onto me, and it upset me. You know, I shouldn't be victimized
mm-hmm.
because I really haven't done anything. So he called me for support when he was in jail because his public defender had dropped off the radar. So then I started looking to see where the fellow was. In the meantime, he was getting into trouble in KCCC. It's difficult. Not all inmates fit into that jail system.
Remind us what KCCC is, because listeners won't know.
KCCC is the Kauai Community Correctional Facility, and that's here on this island. And that's where he was brought and incarcerated. Well, by the time he called me, he had this incident. And shortly after, he was whisked away to Oahu, to Halawa, and put into solitary confinement, which is their way of managing people that get out of hand, I guess.
That don't get with the program. Yeah. Blue, let me just put a pause to the conversation. I'm backing up. You said that a couple of people will be calling in. Share with listeners who anticipate joining this conversation and a little bit about their background.
Well, Kat Brady is on Oahu. She is the community liaison between the public and the prison system. I don't know her credentials that in depth. I do know that she was given an award, I do believe, by the ACLU for her years and years and years of dedication. She's, you know, quite diligent about this, and she goes to sleep at night worrying about all these people that are incarcerated and will never see the light of day.
Right.
The other, Ray Dean Katsu, I believe I gave you the spelling of that name. I didn't bring it with me.
Ray Dean Katsuga?
Yeah, Katsuda.
Suda, with the
yeah, Katsuda, yeah. I'm not in my home because my phone is broken.
No worries. And so she's calling in from the Big Island?
No, she's calling in from Oahu, too.
As well.
She teaches at Chaminade, and she has done her PhD thesis in the disproportionate ratio of Hawaiians in the prison system to the other ethnic groups. The number that I have heard is from Kat, there's 6,000 inmates incarcerated, and 60% of them are Hawaiian.
And so over half.
Over half. So that would suggest that there's something going on.
Another piece of information that needs to be looked at.
Right. It could possibly be racial profiling.
Sure.
In the case of my nephew, I'd have to say that this is, I think, what he's dealing with. He is half Hawaiian, and his name is one of those red flags next to it on this island, you know.
Right. Now, let's talk a little bit about your nephew. How old is he now?
He's 33.
33. You said he just had a 10-year sentence that he went through.
In his 20s.
He was an early, a young man. He was incarcerated.
Yeah, he was. And he grew up in the pipeline. So, that is to say that, he was in foster families.
Okay.
And he ran away, and the first arrest was at 8 years old. And from then on, it just increasingly exaggerated to a point where he found himself incarcerated in the big time.
Uh-huh.
It was when I heard what he was sentenced for, I had to ask his probation officer, once again, 10 years for that. And at which point the parole officer kind of chuckled, and he said, well, he'd been into so much trouble, we thought that this was the best thing to do.
Going to teach him a lesson.
Right.
What was that first offense, if you could share with us?
That got him into trouble.
The 10-year.
Apparently, he and another friend broke into Ace Hardware, I think it was, and stole some garden equipment, and they returned it. And then I think he also took a bag of weed from somebody's tent, marijuana.
Oh, okay.
And so that
wasn't at Ace Hardware, though.
Apparently not. Too bad, because I think a lot of people would be down there right now. But so these two things landed him in jail, and of course they sent him away to Arizona. Apparently they send a lot of the outer island people away to the mainland, and at the time they were kind of skirting around the country, but then they all ended up in Arizona, where we export them now. That's the private facility.
And then exclude them from their family support systems, if they have any.
Right, and then they can get into even worse trouble, because they have no community, no family.
Sure.
And the gangs will try and corral them, because then that's their family. And so you can spend all of your time there in solitary confinement.
Right.
So he gets out in, I think it was 2013.
Could I ask you one question, Blue? Did he have a number of prior arrests and convictions before this Ace Hardware episode occurred?
Very little things. I went to talk to Justin Collar, and Justin went on the computer and went all the way back. His first arrest was at 8 years old for running away, and then there was just little ridiculous things. None of it has is violent. There are no violent offenses. Just little things that can land you in jail, basically. And of course, I think because he is Hawaiian and he's not educated that well, and he has a defiant character, nature, this doesn't lead to him being treated fairly. You know, he seems to be spanked a little harder than the other people. And, yeah, so, no, there's nothing like bank robberies and rapes and murder, nothing like that. You know, just this kind of minor stuff. And you would say, well, you know, certainly that 10 years, that's an excessive sentence. You know what happens to a person who gets put away and isolated from the community for 10 years, you know? So it's my personal view that, you know, rather than rehabilitate him, they've decided that his productivity lies in being an inmate. He butters their bread by being in jail. And I think that many people who are looking at this will agree that there are now professional inmates, that they're much better incarcerated than they are outside because they've been in so long, they've become institutionalized. This is kind of where he's headed.
Well, and also as a tie-in to that issue is the, if you will, growing industry of private prisons, or prisons, for-profit prisons.
For-profit
exactly.
prisons.
Exactly. And you see, the mass incarceration that's going on is creating an overcrowding situation.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, here at this jail, KCCC, I believe there's nine inmates per cell. I mean, it's extremely overcrowded.
Sure.
And every single jail on this island, I believe, are just crowded to the max. So then what they do is they export them. And when they do that, that's when the privatization of the jails comes mm-hmm. into effect. Now, the one in Arizona just recently suffered another death. I think this is the second one that's occurred there. And an inmate from Maui was strangled by his cellmate. And the other one happened actually when my nephew was in that jail, where somehow mysteriously the cell door was left open and this poor kid was brutalized, and whoever did it carved their initials in his chest. It was just horrendous. And at that point the jails, well, our governor had said that he was going to close this down and bring all of the inmates back. And I think that, you know, when you want to talk about prison reform, we can just start there. Don't send them off of their homes, off of their islands. Don't send them away from Hawaii, you know. Keep them here so that we can have contact with them. So, anyway, the situation that he is in now occurred because he took a plea agreement. The way that they extracted the plea agreement by was getting to me. They said, well, do you have next of kin? Because if you have next of kin, we can release you to supervised release to that person. And, of course, by then he was in solitary confinement in Halava, and I was, like, petrified. And I was like, well, of course, you know, that would be the best thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
So they extracted this plea agreement, and lo and behold, no supervised release. It didn't manifest. Me and a friend went down to check and get the ball rolling, only to find out that 2 days after his incarceration, he was assessed, and this was never going to happen. The public defender knew this wasn't going to happen, but they do this. This is standard procedure. Whatever you can dangle in front of the guy to get him to cop a plea
right.
So that they don't go to trial. This is the objective is not to have them go to trial because it's expensive. So how you do that as fast as you possibly can. And then they leave you just sitting. You never hear from them again. You know, my nephew is sitting in the jail. They're waiting and waiting. And nobody calls, you know. And then when he comes back for sentencing.
Oh, Blue, for just a second, could I ask you to hold on and
sure.
tell us, when this was all going on, did he have court dates? Were you aware that he was going to go in front of a judge? And
he would call me. That's the only way we keep in contact. He would tell me what day he would call, and then he would let me know if they were flying him in. I was able to be there at two of those appearances. Or actually, I was there three times. The first time they didn't fly him, and they said they were going to, but I think that was to flush me out and so that the public defender could see that I was actually a substantial
someone
presence,
get a show.
You know. So I did show up, and he didn't come. But the public defender said, "Okay, well, this is procedure. This is what we're going to do."
And we're speaking with Blue Dukes, who's brought this issue forward. We're talking about the criminal justice system, and a relative of hers is involved. I have Alan Parachini in the booth with me. Alan has a background covering the courts in L.A.
True.
County. Alan, what Blue is describing, is that something similar? Do you feel like she's accurately portraying a situation that you've seen?
Or? Yes, I do. And I think one of the, although we don't know really the details of this, I'd like to know more about this individual's record. But one of the things about Hawaii is it's a common wisdom in prison science, if you want to call it that, that one of the best things or most effective things you can do is leave an inmate within striking distance of his or her family, which is why shipping people, if you're in California, shipping people to Pelican Bay from Los Angeles, which is several hundred or more than 1,000 miles, I think,
right.
is destructive to what few vestiges of family relationships are left. Now, if you're in Hawaii and it's 2,500 miles of water plus the distance to Arizona, the chances that any inmate who is transferred like that is going to have any contact, any contact
yeah.
with anyone who's important to him or her drops off to zero. So their ability to connect and have a way in their own makeup to catch up and normalize their lives once they get out, it's hard enough even if you have that proximity. But
right.
for these folks, it's 2.5 strikes out of 3 before they even start.
Right.
And Blue, when the phone rings, I'm going to play some KKCR business. We'll get Kat on the phone and carry on the conversation. But I just wanted to let listeners know where we're at. It's almost 4:30 right now, and we are expecting another phone call to carry on this conversation. I know that this isn't something that you've, if you will, have a passion for, like perhaps Kat does, where this is, affected you, and now you have insight into this situation that most of us don't,
right.
Except if you have a loved one involved in the system.
Well, it's not very transparent, Most of us are not aware of this
mm-hmm.
incredible population of people
mm-hmm.
behind bars. There's a terrible stigmatism around people in jail, and that, they're throwaways. They're just awful people. So,
right.
Throw them away. But, we live in a time now where the Pope, I'm not religious, but the Pope has put out a plea that, there are people on the face of this earth now that are being treated in a third-class rate, and it's time for everybody to stop throwing these kind of people away. They deserve kindness and love and rehabilitation,
mm-hmm.
and certainly the prison population is one of those.
Yeah,
it's absolutely frustrating how slowly this all evolves, but we're seeing evidence both at the federal level and at the state level that all of those three strikes and get tough laws that were madly enacted in the 80s and 90s were a bad idea.
Definitely.
which people warned of at the time those laws were being enacted,
right.
To no avail. And so there is a movement clearly to get away from that extreme sentencing practice. The problem is that this is frustratingly slow.
Yes, indeed. But also, if you look at it in terms of expense, the judicial branch of our government is extremely expensive. My ACLU rep tells me that it costs $85,000 a year to house one inmate. Now, when you think of the possible time that my nephew may be spending for this ridiculousness that he got picked up for, it's like, does the money justify that duration of expense that we're going to put out? It simply doesn't. But it would justify if a fraction of that was put towards rehabilitating them, immersion programs, higher education programs.
Right. So, Blue, I have Kat's going to join us on the phone here.
Okay.
In 25 seconds, I'm going to play this, station business, and then we'll bring Kat right onto the line.
KKCR listens to you. If you'd like to make comments or provide feedback regarding our programming or to suggest programming you'd like to hear, go to kkcr.org, click on the contact link, and take our listener survey. Or send us a letter at KKCR, P.O. Box 825, Hanalei, Hawaii 96714. Kauai Community Radio, listening to you.
There we go, and you are listening to Kauai Community Radio. We have Blue Dukes on the line. You're still with us, Blue? Uh-oh, there we go. Blue, you're still with us?
I am.
No, right on. And Kat Brady joins us from Oahu. Aloha, Kat, and welcome.
Aloha, Jimmy. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. Thank you for calling in just as scheduled. I know Blue reached out to have you join us, and so we welcome your participation. If you wouldn't mind, for the listeners that don't know of you and the work that you do, could you share a little bit about your background and what brings you into this conversation?
Sure. Well, I'm the coordinator of a community group and a community initiative called Community Alliance on Prisons. And we started in the mid-90s, that's 20 years ago, trying to figure out better strategies to address Hawaii's crime problems. And as you probably know, crime is at the lowest level that it's been in for 40 years since we started capturing data in 1975. So we have the lowest crime rate. Yet our prison population has remained pretty stable at 6,000. And that begs the question, how come?
That's a good question.
What's up with that? So what we do at Community Alliance on Prisons is we're known for our research. We research more effective strategies. So we like to look around not only the United States, but around the world and see what people are doing. And it's what's really interesting is that the U.S. incarcerates people at a rate that is just unprecedented. In 2009, the World Prison Incarceration Rates came out, and we had a conference, and a professor from the University of Texas at Austin, she crunched numbers, and she said, you know, if Hawaii was counted as its own country, we would be the fourth largest jailer in the world. Isn't that outrageous?
Yeah. And again, we talked just briefly about that, you know, the for-profit prison system. How extensive is this?
Oh, well, that's totally changed the whole face of criminal justice, because now it's really about economics. It's not really, but justice is not really much of a factor. It's mostly about economics. And for the private prison, the corporate prison corporations, you know, it's keeping the money flowing and the beds warm. So they employ several techniques to ensure that. And some of them are, like when somebody is in Arizona, say, and they're up for a video parole hearing, they will get written up for something manini the day before. Then they show up on video in shackles. And that gives a very particular impression
sure.
to the parole board.
Right, right.
So, and then after the parole hearing, they'll have an administrative hearing in Saguaro about the write-up, and many times they'll rip it up and throw it out. But meanwhile, the person could probably lose parole because of that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when I look at those things and I say, that is, you know, immoral to use people to, I mean, people are getting to be Hawaii's largest export.
Wow.
And that is really scary because Hawaii has a huge trade deficit, but actually we're exporting people as if they're widgets.
Mm-hmm.
And that to me is contrary to aloha. It's contrary to everything that we live by here. And we also know that Native Hawaiians are so disproportionate in comparison to other ethnicities in prison. It's just, it's ludicrous. Blue. And you have to look at that and say, what is going on?
Right. Blue shared that 60% of the prisoner population is Native Hawaiian descent.
Well, what's interesting is the department says 40%. But a former director actually told some people in the community that it's closer to 60 to 70%. And I can say myself, when I go into the prisons, most of the people are Native Hawaiian.
Mm-hmm. Some of that could depend on how you define Native Hawaiian.
Sure. Now, let me ask you this, Kat. Are you familiar with a little bit about Blue's story
yes.
or her nephew's situation?
Yes.
Blue, let me ask you, when your nephew recommitted after spending 10 years in and his most recent offense, was that a violation of his parole, or was it
no.
was it a nonviolent offense? What was that?
It was a nonviolent offense, and it was basically they state that he broke into somebody's house and stole a set of clothes,
mm-hmm.
You know, a tank top and shorts, sunglasses, you know, which were valued all under $100. However, you know, we don't really know since he signed away his rights to a trial. So we don't really know where the truth lies. The way that it works is the prosecuting attorney's office will do the investigation. And if they think they have a sewn-up trial, they will pressure the public defender to push for a plea. And in this case, they figured they had a sewed-up deal, and this is why that occurred. Now, because I was following it and went to talk to the guy about what they offered for a plea agreement, I did write a letter to the judge, you know, because I thought this is totally unethical. They knew they couldn't offer him supervised release to get and extract his confession, and they did it. But the judge at that point then modified his sentence to 7 months. And he was doing his 7 months, and he also at the same time managed to get himself into a drug, and it was a dual diagnostic program.
Mm-hmm.
And that program he walked away from. And he walked away from it because of a bullying incident, and that's when they resentenced him and slapped him with his ten-year sentence.
Wow, because he ran away from the court-mandated program.
It was his decision to go into that, but the circumstances in there were getting just so exaggerated that there wasn't any possible way he could stay in.
Mm-hmm.
They don't take that into consideration. They just say, well, you walked away from it, and you've basically broken your probation, although from my understanding, he wasn't really even on probation. And so they resentenced him to the 10 years.
Blue, so we understand this, what role have drugs played in this guy's life?
I'm pretty positive, just like any person that's grown up like him. They play a significant role, you know, but I don't think that it has pressured or pushed him into any of these circumstances that he's gotten involved in. The trouble this time around, basically, if you look at it, because he doesn't know how to relate in the community because he's been so isolated, he doesn't know who he should stay away from. He has no knowledge of appropriate friendship and inappropriate friendship. They just kind of dropped him off. He went out there, and he's been locked up for 10 years. Of course, he wants to party. You know, everybody would want to party. So, I'm sure that there's been incidences of that, but certainly not.
The sad part is that your nephew has been raised by the system, so he's that's his first offense was when he was 8.
Right.
I mean, this is, there's all this research on brain development. And, the frontal cortex doesn't get developed until somebody's in their mid-20s. And that's the executive section of the brain that makes decisions.
Mm-hmm.
This is good, this is not good. I mean, that's not even developed yet.
Right.
So, it shows what happens when we don't provide services to kids who are in his situation.
Right.
Jimmy, what's most telling about this is how usual it is. These folks are not describing an unusual, out-of-the-box situation.
Right.
This is a very, very common description. And what we're hearing Blue talk about here, you could hear thousands of times if you interviewed people whose
people
kin
of color.
Are...
poor people.
Exactly.
Folks that have been part of the system, they're foster families, they didn't grow up in your traditional family structure.
Exactly.
No, you're absolutely right. I'm going to ask this, Kat, where's the pressure point? Where do we apply pressure? Is it at the local county jurisdiction with our local police and prosecutor, or is it a state issue is it never just one thing but a combination of many things?
Well, it's actually many things, but it all starts with arrest. So it has to be training of the police to understand brain development in youth. Right, that would be the first thing,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, we stop the flow of kids going into the system. And luckily, the year before last, 2013, a big juvenile justice bill passed. And now they want to reserve the beds for kids in HYCF for kids who need to be separated from the community. And other kids, like Blue's nephew, would be in, like, group homes or...
Sure, transitional housing.
Community programs.
Right.
That, where they could get services that directly, you know, impact their pathway to crime. Right? So we need to actually start looking at human beings in the system rather than numbers. And that's one of the problems, because we like to put... labels on things. Oh, repeat offenders.
Sure.
Repeat offenders and all that. And that's a very emotionally charged term. And, you know, it could be somebody who shoplifts, you know, and you'd have to look at why does somebody do this? So, you know, there are lots of reasons. Some of it could be substance abuse, you know, needing money to buy drugs. Other things could be some brain malfunction or but just some cognitive disconnect.
Right.
I mean, there's many things that we can do. Prison, incarceration should be the very last thing we even consider. And yet, we don't.
Mm-hmm.
We are incarcerating people, not the people that we're afraid of. We're incarcerating people we're mad at. And I'm thinking, this is ludicrous. It's expensive. And the result is we're creating this huge criminal underclass, because people in prison, you know, young, nonviolent people, they're in prison with people who are in there for a long time, people who are in for big crimes,
right,
who school the younger people. So we are paying $50,000 a year, $137 a day, to incarcerate people to go to criminal college.
Right.
And I'm thinking, geez, we could be sending people to college,
right,
or vocational school.
Right, and working on providing, if you will, some type of transformative program that allows them to break that cycle and to better themselves if they are willing to walk that path.
There was a study several years ago that found that the average cost of state imprisonment was less per year than sending them to Harvard. So, of course, legislators got on that wagon, and there were proposals to send everybody to Harvard, of course. But it makes its point. And the insidious thing in the private prison business, although this probably, maybe, Kat, you know this, but my guess is that it hasn't started to happen in Hawaii yet, but they see halfway houses and that kind of thing as a growth industry.
Competition.
Exactly. As they see populations going down, they're looking to cement their revenue stream. And so they're trying to get into that business.
You are so right. You are so right. That business and many others. One of the most distressing things is when the governor announced that he was going to, quote unquote, partner with a private prison to build the new prison on Oahu. And, you know, I thought to myself, just in 2014, CCA's Correction Corporation of America's annual report had a paragraph in it basically saying that, you know, hey, all this prison reform and reforming sentences and early release, this is impacting our business. You know, we need to, like, really ramp up immigrant detention. So right now, that's their big thing. But they're also trying to get into reentry, and they've been wooing legislators. Oh, see our reentry program in Las Vegas. It's so well run and so wonderful. And it was a couple of years ago I read in Arizona where the CCA was actually going into the schools to say, we will provide security for you. And I'm thinking, and when I said that to a legislator, he said, oh, why would they do that? And I said, because they're a corporation and they're looking to increase their base.
You know, it's hilarious that you mentioned Las Vegas, because I can hear a cynical prison executive saying, referencing Kauai, that because so many Kauai people like to go to Vegas, it just makes sense.
Yeah.
You can just hear that.
Yeah, they come up with a whole slew of excuses. But, you know, there are so many things that we can do and that are available to us right now.
Well, let's hear some of those things. I think, Kat, that's something that I think our listeners are probably interested in hearing about as well. We will have another caller join us, and if she's listening, Raydeen, did I get that name?
Yeah.
Okay, so I did drop a phone call for somebody who just called in. I have to play this. It's really... It's going to take us, you know what, I'll play it when Raydeen calls back, and we'll take a short pause from this conversation. I have Blue Dukes joining us on phone, as well as Cap Brady calling in from Oahu, Alan Parkini in the booth, talking about the criminal justice system and prison reform, or the opportunity for that, and some of the solutions that might be just beyond the horizon. Kat, you suggested that there are things that we could do. What are some of them?
Right now. Okay, well, in 2012, we passed two bills that were related to the Justice Reinvestment Initiative. And that's this initiative that was started by a nonpartisan nonprofit called the Council of State Governments. And they work with the Justice Center. And they actually, there was a big grant. They started in 2005, and they started in Texas. And Texas had like nine prison construction things on the books, and 180,000 people in prison. And the super right wing of the Texas legislature said, we got to stop doing this. So they embraced justice reinvestment. They took all nine prisons off the books, and they built up community programs. So we could do the same thing. And in 2012, $1 million was put aside for community-based programs, and that would be substance abuse, mental health treatment, you know, a whole range
sure.
of programs. And to date, not one extra slot has been created.
Kat, if you know, what community reentry facilities of any kind are there on Kauai?
Well, we don't really have much reentry. The department says they have a comprehensive reentry system, but there really is not one.
From what I know, there's a few halfway houses.
Yes, and not all of them have programs.
Yes.
Some of them are just living.
And the thing is, I think a month after you're there, you have to start paying rent, you know.
In Oahu, it's like $250 a room, you know, to rent a bedroom, but you're also with other people. Right. In that room.
Yeah, and I mean, so, if you're in, you know, where are you supposed to even get a job, you know?
Well, and even then, how are you supposed to get there once you have it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Right. And the parole, they usually have people on these 5-year paroles. And at any given time when you're on parole, you have to drop and get to your parole person to either take a test, you know, a urine test or whatever. And they don't care, you know, how you do it. You have to get there. And if you don't, then you've just violated your parole. But in order to get anywhere, when you get on parole, you have to have an address. You have to have a place to live. That's the first
mm-hmm.
thing.
Mm-hmm.
How can you have a place to live if you don't have money to rent a place? How can you have money to rent a place if you don't have a job? I mean, you know, it's, the deck is stacked against you.
It is. And that's one of the things that we're working on. There is a reentry commission, and we are trying to assist the department. We just kind of got it up and running again, or we're trying to get it up and running again. to really try to help the department. But the department really, they're focused on incarceration. And I keep saying reentry cannot work unless people are programmed appropriately. And that's why the reentry law that passed in 2007 said the department shall be working on reentry for each person entering the system so that they're programmed appropriately throughout their time and they can come out with skills so that they could actually get jobs.
Kat, what would you suggest people on Kauai can do to help move this process along? What is there anything unique to our island? What can people here do that can most likely actually accomplish something?
Well, they could testify at the legislature, because one of the things that will really impact the system is sentencing reform. Because right now, people have long sentences. They're on parole and probation for long periods of time. That's crazy. You know, we fought for having a short parole period for nonviolent offenders, and the Honolulu prosecutor just went ballistic and, you know, pushed that it had to be 4 years. When I actually spoke with people in adult judiciary, adult probation and the judiciary, and they all said if people violate, it's within the first 18 months.
Right.
So what does it serve anybody to have parole or probation officers with hundreds of cases? Wouldn't it be better for them to focus on people who really need the support and help them successfully reintegrate? So there's sentencing reform is really important, and I have a big list that I send out, hearing notices and, you know, talking points of the different bills, and anybody can get on that list who wants to testify and support a more humane, compassionate justice system.
Kat, I was going to say, I don't know if you're aware and if this has any bearing, but one of our politicians from this island, Dee Morikawa, sent out a circular in that she was on the judicial committee for this legislative session. Do you think that she has any bearing on things that you're talking about, legislation and that?
Yes. She's a vote, and that's important. And she's now the head of the Human Services Committee in the House. So she is she's working on juvenile justice stuff also. Mm-hmm. So she does have an interest. She's got a heart for that. And,
letters, say to her?
Contacting your legislator and saying, please support these strategies. Another one is diversion, jail diversion. People who have mental health or substance abuse problems would probably be better served in community-based programs that were focused on their pathways to crime, rather than putting them in prison and having them wait to see if they can even get into programming, and in many cases they cannot, and then they can't get paroled because they haven't done the programming that the parole board recommended. So, I mean, it's this big circle game,
right.
And we could easily just look at all the people who actually shouldn't be there. And I've heard this from more than one warden who has said to me, there are so many people here who should not be here.
Right.
Kat, do you know off the top of your head what proportion of the inmates, Hawaii's inmates, are drug-related offenses?
That's been kind of weird because it's hard to suss out because many people are in for multiple charges.
Mm-hmm.
So when I ask that question, the department tells me, well, if drugs are the lead offense, then, you know, maybe we could tell you, but not always. So it's kind of, I would say, a large portion. And I don't have a percentage, but it's a large portion are in for drugs or drug-related crimes.
And Kat, what is the best way if folks want to communicate with you directly? How can they get in touch with you? Or do you have a website that you prefer to have folks go to for information or issues? I did find your Community Alliance on Prisons online. You have a WordPress blog, yeah. CAPHawaii1word.wordpress.com. And it seems like you've done a good job of outlining some of the issues, as well as even a tab for how to get involved. Share a little bit about your blog, your work, and how people can get involved.
Well, we really work on systemic issues. When I first started, I was really kind of focused on program issues, but then I realized that if we don't change the philosophy of the system, every year the program is fighting for its life. And if we don't actually change the basic tenet of the system, mm-hmm. we're never going to get ahead of the curve. So I started really looking into meeting with criminologists from all our universities, doing major research, and just looking to see what's going on around the world. And we are just such an outlier. So testifying on things is really important, because the legislators need to hear from community, and Hawaii legislators need to hear from Hawaii people, because your senator is now the president of the Senate, Ron Kochi.
I was just going to ask you, our guys, you mentioned Dee Morikawa, she sits on I know she sits as a vice chair of the health committee. Do you know what other committee she might sit on, and as well as Jimmy Tokioka or Derek Kawakami as our representatives? What are some of those positions that they sit at that we might be able to, when we get a chance to talk to them, whether at Foodland or at the fair or
exactly.
Wherever.
Those are great places to catch people. Actually, Dee is no longer the vice chair of health, because she's now the chair of human services.
Okay.
So let me see.
Which is a great position in regards to diversion programs, or programs where we're looking to target youth and youthful offenders.
Yes.
Sure.
Yeah.
And my experience with her, she's been very responsive in the past and engages at multiple levels, you know, will return phone calls or emails and Facebook messages frequently.
Good. I do think it's really important that Kauai people contact Ron Kochi, because just being a Senate president, that's very, very important.
Absolutely.
That he hears from you. Jimmy.
Jimmy just had a problem with the
Jimmy had a little problem. what was kind of interesting today, there was an article in the Honolulu Star Bulletin about $8,000 in fines being levied against legislators and some candidates, and they kept calling them some of the legislators are repeat offenders.
And we know what the recidivism rate for them will be.
Well, we also know that they get a slap on the wrist. And, you know, here they've abused public funds.
I don't know if anybody was listening to Democracy Now! Today, but there was a candidate who's running for president. He's the governor, I think, of Baltimore. And he was talking about a two-level justice system that, you know, we have to do away with that. And I think that, you can see, if you can pay, you can play.
Right.
I mean, we watched a high-profile case here on this island. I don't need to mention the name. At the time, my nephew was in KCCC with this person who was found guilty of manslaughter, who got 7 months and got to do 6 months of it at home. You know, not everybody gets that privilege, you know.
No, but when you can, if you will, invest in your early release program, you get good results.
Right.
You know what's interesting? We have been fighting to get a good time bill or earn time, where people can earn time working on their own rehabilitation. The mm-hmm. federal government has it, like 44 states have it in different forms, earned time or good time. Hawaii just refuses to do it. And they kept saying, it's too hard. And I said, they can do it in Mississippi. Right. Are you saying we can't do it here?
Right.
It's ridiculous to say it's too hard. That it's a complicated process, but it's not rocket science.
Well, the science
And you don't have to make it complicated. You could basically say, you know, if you're in this program and you've completed this program, you get, you know, one day
X off. Amount of time.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, it doesn't have to be complicated. But if you don't want to do something, you make it complicated.
There we go. Folks, I need to do the top of the hour. You are listening to Kauai Community Radio, Hanalei, K-A-Q-A, Kilauea, K-K-C-R, Hanalei, K-A-Q-A, Kilauea, K-2-2-4-C-Q in Anahola, and K-2-8-4-A-L in Haleiwa. Streaming worldwide at www.kkcr.org at 90.9 FM, 91.9 FM island-wide, 92.7 Anahola, Molua'a, 104.7 FM on Oahu, and 95.1 on the cable dial. Also, you'll hear us on Oahu right here.
KKCR, Hanalei, K-A-Q-A, Kilauea, K-224-CQ, Anahola, K-284-AL, Haleiwa.
There we go. Being a little redundant at the top of the hour, it is a little bit after 5 o'clock. We have Kat Brady. She is, the director of Community Alliance on Prisons. Did I get that right?
The coordinator.
There we go. Thank you.
One of the things I wanted to say is if you want to know what committees your people are on, go to the legislative website, www.hawaiicapital.hawaii.gov. And you can pull up your legislator and it'll tell you what committees that person is on.
There you go.
Because
and that,
the Senate has changed.
That website is also a great place to just get involved, to send your testimony on a number of bills. We have an upcoming meeting that will deal with the public access room.
Oh, great. They're terrific.
We have free workshops that are going to be offered here on Kauai from the week of October 13th through the 16th. The places are going to be on Tuesday, October 13th at 6 p.m. at the Kalaheo Neighborhood Center, and then on Wednesday the 14th at 6 p.m. at the Kapa'a Public Library, and on Thursday afternoon at 5:30 at the Lihue Public Library, and then on Friday at 12 o'clock noon here in Princeville at the Public Library. This is an ideal time to learn more about the lawmaking process, how it works, and to let state legislators know what you'd like them to focus on when the next session begins in January. The public access room coordinator, Virginia Beck, she puts it, I can't guarantee the legislators will do what you want them to, but they do listen, and through PAR and the legislature's website, they provide some great tools and resources to make it easier for you to add your voice. So the topics covered at this workshop will be tips and techniques on effective lobbying, testimony, and communicating with senators and representatives, understanding the legislative process, the deadlines, and the power dynamics, and offer easy-to-use tools available on the legislature's website, as well as some helpful handouts, guides, and resources. The 90-minute workshop ends with time to focus and collaborate on matters of interest to the participants. The flexible nature of the workshop provides a useful start for newcomers, as well as new information and inspiration for veterans of the legislature. So this is a workshop. It's a free workshop for the public. It'll be happening on October 13th through the 16th. That's the second week, maybe the third week of October. Tuesday, again in Kalaheo. Wednesday at Kapa'a Public Library, and Thursday at the Lihue Public Library. All times are at 6 o'clock except for Lihue at 5:30, and then on Friday midday at noon at the Princeville Public Library. Just a great way to learn a little bit more about our own legislative process and some of those, if you will, subtleties that will allow you to get your testimony in on time, or to know when that crossover date is and who are the people that you need to be talking with when that bill becomes heard by another side of the House. So, Kat, you mentioned that you do some lobbying, you do some efforts. What are some of the things that you anticipate this upcoming legislative session to move forward on?
Well, first of all, I'm not a lobbyist. I'm an advocate.
Oh, thank you.
I don't look like Jack Abramson, and I don't want to either.
I stand corrected. Thanks, Kat.
You've probably never been convicted of anything either.
Oh, no. Somebody asked me once, what's the difference between an advocate and a lobbyist? And I said, well, at the end of the session, the lobbyist has his hand out and says, I'll take my check. And the advocate's on the fourth floor crying, saying, what happened to my bill?
But at least you can sleep at night.
Yes. Yes. So the public access room is really, those workshops are really invaluable, because the one thing we can never forget is this is our government. We are the government. We are the government. And we have a representative democracy. And we have to make sure that our representatives are actually representing us. So that's why it's really important. So some of the things that I think are going to be coming up, well, I know that are going to be coming up, is sentencing reform.
Mm-hmm.
Because right now there's a 10-year review of the penal code, and I happen to be on that committee. And it's a bear, because the penal code is huge. But hopefully we'll be able to make some headway, and I'm going to be pushing to repeal mandatory minimums, to lessen the impact of this enhanced sentencing. You know, they have crimes that say, okay, well, you know, there was a child who was within earshot, so it should be enhanced. So, you know, I think the sentence should be proportional to the crime.
Right.
Not, you know,
exactly.
we shouldn't, mandatory sentencing is what I call lazy justice.
Sure.
You're right.
If I can interject, my nephew went before the parole board yesterday for sentence modification, and I learned that I think there are 7 members on this board.
5.
Because of the disproportionate amount of Hawaiians, there should be 3 members. There's only 1 Hawaiian on this 7-member board. So I think that you know, recommendation could be put in that, you know, we have to represent this population
that's a
more
great
fairly.
Suggestion.
And right. I think maybe, you know, writing to some of the legislators about this, I don't know if that would help.
Well, Kat,
I suspect,
Kat, that you would agree that it, as old-fashioned as it sounds, contacting your legislator remains a very effective way to relate with them. Phone calls are fine, but writing is much better. Email has revolutionized that communication. It's really important to, and they hear you. They pay attention. They really do.
Mm-hmm. They do, and they do read the testimony. I know a lot of people say, oh, they don't care, they don't read the testimony. That has not been my experience in 20 years.
Right. I sent testimony in on a bill this past session, and I was shocked when I heard back from a staff member that he'd read it and taken it to the representative to show him what some portion of what I had said that he thought the legislator ought to pay attention to. It's remarkably well connected in that respect.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I'm always impressed when I get a response from, if you will, another senator or rep from some other island that's not my representative, when they come and they bother to take the time to respond to my testimony. And again, you know, our local representatives and our council members as well, they've all always have made themselves available, accessible, and we need to take that initiative to take it to the next level, or at least reciprocate.
Oh, definitely. You know, years ago, Senator Inouye said, you know, I never hear from my constituents, so, you know, I don't know. Well, I'm very sorry he said that, because then I started writing to him every week.
So,
but, I mean, that's the power of democracy.
When you exercise it.
Well, I think we should.
Yes, absolutely.
It would be a really good idea.
I want to just kind of check in with Blue, your initiative to approach the the radio station to have this story be told. I thank you for sharing a little bit about your family and your nephew's experience, and I hope that we can carry on this conversation. I'm not sure what you might have in planned or in mind. I know, Kat, that you are engaged with this, and I'd love to have you join us again as we get closer to the legislative session to see if there's some lobbying and advocation work that we could be doing from our end over here. Blue, what would you like to see happen next?
Well, I think in terms of the inmates that are on this island, I'm working with a couple of people who are professional educators, and they are providing support right now to my nephew as far as correspondence and a little monetary, because when you go in, you have no money to buy anything.
Right.
And until you get any money, you don't have anything, you know, like soap and toothpaste. And so and these people have offered to set up some kind of a remedial program by which they prisoners that are released can, you know, can be addressed some of their issues, like, you know, can you balance a checkbook? You know, simple things
some
that
basic
they
skills.
Probably have never done because they have been in jail all their entire life.
Mm-hmm.
So
now,
of course, funds need to be generated for something like that to occur. And I think I was, I don't know if I was telling you, Jimmy, but once upon a time there used to be these Pell grants in place that were established for higher education.
Mm-hmm.
And there is an experimental program right now in California, in San Quentin.
Yes.
And they, a lot of inmates want to go there now because you can get a degree, you know?
Yes.
And these people have nothing to do. They have nothing to do, so why not educate them, you know? But also, I'm sure that they would love, my nephew right now would love to get a dictionary. Now, I don't have a computer, so it's hard for me to get online and order. Everything has to be brand new. Everything has to come from a store bound and wrapped without suggestion. And if not, then you can't send it. Well, there's no bookstore here on this island that I can get a dictionary from.
Right.
So here this kid is sitting waiting for something like this to occur. Also, he may be transitioning to Arizona, so you don't want to do anything till you know where he's going. So, you know, this whole situation of how do you help somebody who's now stuck in there, you know?
And in Arizona, you cannot just send a book. You can't order a book online from any store. It has to be from Barnes & Noble or there's one other place.
And
but,
it's strange,
you know, they've
because
made it really difficult. This is books, brand new books. What's the problem?
Yeah, and they're very expensive, you know. And the mailing fee is very expensive. I mean, the toll on the relatives outside, you know, the money that it costs us to do telephone calls and to send, you know, any parcels.
Right.
And the list of things. I just sent some correspondence, and the card had glitter on it, and they sent it back. You know, I mean, it's like, do we have to be punished too? Isn't it punishment enough that we, you know, may never get to see this person again, you know? I thank Kat Brady so much for coming online. I think she's made it, all of these points real clear about how people, you know, can actively, you know, without blood, sweat, and tears, get involved in trying to help this situation out. And it's an urgent, urgent situation. The judicial system, the way it's going, is unsustainable. We're living
you know,
in a country
our
with
motto,
a lot of broken branches, you know. And
you know, our motto is today's inmate, tomorrow's neighbor.
Exactly.
You got that right.
People need to understand that more than 95% of the people in Hawaii are coming out, and they're going to be on the bus next to your kid. So how do you want that person to be? Do you want them to be bitter and angry, or do you want them to be sweaty and coming home from work?
Right.
I'd rather have my kid sitting next to a sweaty guy coming home from work.
Really?
It's crazy. You know, it's common sense. That's not so common in the system.
Right. Well, the paradigm, I think, is shifting. For several decades, the paradigm was towards punitive, towards punishment, punishment, punishment. Now,
Hawaii still wants to pass mandatory minimums.
Yeah.
I do have to add that. because we are an outlier. Because when you look, when justice reinvestment analysts came in and they looked at all our numbers, the people on the working group, and I was not on it, but people on the working group asked them, said, how could that be? Hawaii's blue.
Yes,
and right. The response was, your numbers are redder than South Carolina's.
Yeah.
We have people on parole and probation for 15, 20 years.
Right.
This is crazy.
Right.
Yeah, that's a quite a tremendous liability in our community that way.
Yeah.
And there are incredible models. Apparently, the Scandinavian countries have exceptional prison systems where
Norway,
their prisoners
Germany.
Go home and come back in the evening. You know, I mean, that you're looking at people that are going to be happy. You know, and wouldn't it be nice if these people could be happy on top of free also?
Well, and learning skills so that they can survive on the outside and take care of themselves and their families. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
So there is so much we can do, and the frustrating part is that we don't choose to do it. So that's why it takes the major community push to say, hey, wait a minute, these are our family members.
Right.
There we go.
And
well,
we're not ready to lock them up and throw away the key.
Thank you. No, we're not ready for that. And I thank you, Cap Brady, for joining us from Oahu. Cap Brady, the coordinator for the Community Alliance on Prison. You can find more about her group that she's working with at www.caphawaii.wordpress.com. And Blue Dukes, this won't be the last time we'll have you on Kauai Community Radio to talk about this issue. We'll continue to cover it here on the Community Radio. And the Out of the Box show welcomes listeners to join the conversation. We're going to shift gears here, ladies. I bid you fond aloha and mahalo for your work.
Thank you again.
Thank you, Jimmy. Really
thank
nice
you.
To touch base after the super fairy.
Very nice. Always a pleasure, Kat. And thank you, Blue.
And thanks, Alan, for your comment.
Yes. Thanks, Alan.
Thank you for calling.
Okay, aloha.
Mahalo for joining us. We will be taking care of some station business at the top of the hour, came and went. So before that, we'll take a little musical interlude and move into our next segment. We'll talk about the county mayor proposal that council member Mason Chalk has put forward in front of the agenda for us to consider. But before there, little Bob Dylan to wind this one up.
Flames, roots of South America, fighting for his days. All the victims. driving in a bar. Remember you said you saw the getaway car. How'd you like to play ball along? Society a favor. That son of a bitch is brave and getting braver. We wanna put his ass in the stir. We wanna pin this triple murder. Drunkards from the slums. To the white folks, he was just a revolutionary bomb. To the black folks, he was just a crazy nigger. No one doubted that he pulled the trigger. Though they could not produce the gun, the DA said he was the one who did the deed. And they all went cherry and pay. And the tides are free to drink martinis and watch the sunrise while Ruben sits like Buddha in a 10-foot cell, an innocent man in a living hell. Yes, that's the story of the hurricane, but it won't be over till they clear his name. Give him back the time he's done, put in a prison cell for one time. He could have been the champion of the world.
Aloha, members of the Kekahu Foundation and KKCR. This October, the Kekahu Foundation Board of Directors, which oversees the management and operation of KKCR, will consider revisions to the Foundation's bylaws, which have not been updated since 2001. The proposed revisions would give more power to the Kekahu Foundation members to participate in meetings, elect and remove directors, and make or reject future changes to the bylaws. The Board welcomes your input. You can review and comment on the proposed revisions by going to the kkcr.org homepage, where you will find a link to the proposed changes and instructions on how to provide input, which is due by October 15th. Mahalo.
There you go. Thanks, Dean, for that public service announcement. I've got a couple of more that we're going to do, but first I'm going to let you know that this out-of-the-box program is made possible by the good folks at Hawaii Life, Tahiti Nui, Compassionate Care Hawaii, and Lawful Hawaiian Government.
Neil Norman and the Hawaii Life Brokerage Ohana proudly supports GMO-free Kauai, agricultural biodiversity, and sustainable farming practices, such as community gardens, food forests, seed saving, and beekeeping. Malama aina.
Announcing the return of the Tahiti Nui's Hanalei Luau, featuring 50 years of songs and dances as a tribute to their mama, Auntie Louise. Tahiti Nui, providing live Hawaiian music on Kauai since 1963. This family-style luau is every Wednesday, 5 to 7:30. More information at 826-6277 or online at thenui.com.
Kevin Bako, MD of Hawaii Compassionate Care, offers medical marijuana certification exams at his office in Kapa'a. Information and appointments available at 808-854-6335 or online at hawaiicompassionatecare.com.
The Lawful Hawaiian Government's election will take place Saturday, September 12th. Polling places are the neighborhood centers in Kekaha, Kalaheo, Koloa, Lihue, and Kapa'a, plus the Anahola Clubhouse and Waipa Foundation. Polls are open at 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Hawaiian Nationals, it's your kuleana to vote.
Mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. And we're past the top of the hour. We usually do that right at the top. We have covered a fair amount of information being shared about our criminal justice system. Played a little music to accentuate that as well. Some Bob Dylan there. Many of you would recognize the story of the hurricane. We're going to shift gears and talk a little bit. Actually, we're going to talk a lot about this. I've got Alan Parachini.
Right.
There we go. Got it again. And thanks for joining us for this segment. I got you on Facebook to commit to coming on in. Little did I know that you were already here on Tuesday, and we won't get too far into the if you will, the controversy at Hanalei School.
Right.
But it sounded like Felicia did a masterful job of trying to, if you will, facilitate a community conversation about a sticky subject.
I think Felicia fleshed out a situation that needed to be fleshed out.
Mm-hmm.
And the number of phone calls and the amount of passion and the conscientiousness of the two parent women who are guests, mm-hmm, was remarkable. It was a really, really reassuring example of how community dialogue can happen.
Terrific. And you were part of a meeting today?
Yes. I was here Tuesday because I was sort of Felicia's backup. I was going to talk about a weather issue. But,
there we go. Because you never know where these stories might go.
Yes, I know, or who's going to show up. But I got interested enough that I attended a community meeting in Hanalei last night, and then there was a demonstration at the school this morning. The meeting last night was attended by about 70, about that same number were on the line this morning.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an unfortunate situation in which a new principal following a beloved former principal has simply not gotten off to a very good start. And so the question is, what do you do about it?
Right.
And the parents are adamant that the principal has to go. What struck me most about it, and I'm the parent, I'm the child of two school administrators, so, and my first wife was LA Unified vice principal and principal, so this is something I'm accustomed to hearing about. About half the faculty of Hanalei School departed in the last year. That's a very, very loud alarm bell that tells you there is something wrong at that school. And for the Department of Education to have taken so long to get around to fixing it, and there's not even evidence yet that they're going to. Bill Arakaki was at the school yesterday. He came back today. He was going to be meeting individually with each teacher today and tomorrow. But I think there's still a lot of frustration for the parents that that's talk and not action, and what they want is action.
There we go. So that's a story that I'm sure will, as the DOE slowly responds, and that's the typical way that that large bureaucratic organization does respond, if they do respond. But to have Bill Arakaki both on the phone and then to come to the meetings last night and today, I think indicates a level of concern and will... meeting with all those teachers, that's a big job.
Well, the parents, I don't think see it that way. They're really upset that he has not responded, and I gather he hasn't even acknowledged letters. So what his actual level of concern in this situation is, I'm not sure we know. It certainly hasn't been enough to satisfy this growing community outpouring of concern.
There we go. And I knew we would open up the door when we bring a subject in. But one of the listeners wanted to know, when are we going to talk about the county manager? And so I will bring you on up. Sir, are you there?
Yes, Jimmy, I'm here.
There we go. Familiar sounding voice. Can I use your first name?
You certainly can, Jimmy. And Jimmy, I appreciate all you do to make this island go better.
Well, thank you, Glenn. Appreciate that. And I'll share, for the record, Glenn Mickens, one of the nitpickers and one of the eighth council members who goes regularly, attends our county council meetings. Thank you for joining us here on Out of the Box.
Thank you, Jimmy.
And sitting across from me is Alan Parkini. I don't know if you've met Glenn Mickens.
I probably have seen Glenn Mickens, but we haven't had the pleasure of being introduced.
There we go. So making the introduction now, Glenn, you've written a number of letters in favor of the county manager position and that system of government. Alan recently penned as was that your first column?
No. It was the second column, I believe. Yeah, it's a regular monthly column in the Garden Island called Kauai Perspective. This was the second one, and I wrote it. It's a piece that probably is quite contrary to what Glenn feels about this subject. I'm really on the fence about it myself, personally. I wrote the piece questioning some of the assumptions about making a shift to county manager, because I thought the debate had been very one-sided so far, and I thought that if people are going to make an informed decision, they need to know what the other side of that story is, and that's what I was trying to do.
And Glenn, what did you think of Alan's paper or his column and your response to that?
Well, I've got a short testimony here that maybe Alan would be kind enough to listen to, and maybe he wants to respond, maybe he doesn't. Can I go ahead and read it?
Please do.
Okay. With all respect to Mr. Is it Parkini or Cheney?
It's Parkini, actually.
Okay, thank you. With all due respect to Mr. Parkini, he states that we proponents claim that the manager would, quote, be immune from political pressure and the temptation to engage in unethical or illegal activity. He then says that this claim is naive and unrealistic and urges the reader to search the Internet for dozens of stories about county manager indictments. On examination, the great bulk of these stories are about positions other than county managers, and a better and fairer request would have been to search for convictions rather than indictments. And a more telling deficiency is that there is no corresponding request to search the Internet as to indictments of mayors. There are many, many more. The list of indicted mayors might have included, and I'm sure you know this, Alan, the Kauai mayor who escaped by pleading the Fifth Amendment as to his Gasgate conduct. And, like you pointed out, there's no county manager is not a cure-all by any positive means. But it would make taking care of the multitude of problems that have faced and are facing Kauai that we hope would be system would be welcome. The system is used all over our country, has proven far superior to the manager council form of government. And at least all we've been trying to do since 2005, I guess, when we started this, all we want to try and do is get it on the ballot, let the people vote it up or down. So this is basically my one comment to your thing. I thought it had a few other things. If Mr. Bewley will print it, we have a letter put together that we're going to send in. I'm not sure that Bill will print it or not, but if he does, anyway.
Well, I would welcome it, frankly, myself.
Yeah, well, I love back and forth, and like you say, there's definitely two sides to every story. And, you know, we've been painting our side of the story there. When we went through this before, back in 2005, I think it was, we had several meetings around the island. But regretfully, the administration mandated that their total workforce be at these meetings. So we had a handful of citizens that were there in favor of it, and of course the mayor mandated that these people be there if they want to have job security, I presume.
There we go.
So Glenn, it's a one-sided thing.
Let's revisit that for folks who might not have been here in 2005. These meetings, you mentioned we. Who is we that you refer to, and which group hosted these meetings that you just mentioned?
Well, I think the administration held them down in Lihue and up in Princeville because we went to both of them. I think they had one more if I'm not mistaken. But they were done by the administration.
Was it the administration as part of the Charter Review Commission?
No. The Charter Review Commission. We try to get them to tell us about this, trying to why they didn't want to put it on the ballot. We couldn't get an answer out of the Charter Review Commission. No, it strictly came out of the administration.
So that series of meetings, because I remember Ken Taylor promoting if you will, a speaker that was from, and I can't remember the name of the Association of County Governments or Association of...
ICMA, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So you remember. What is ICMA?
But that wasn't the time. Ken has brought him over here since that time. But this was early on when it was just... Well, there were a few people. Louis Abrams was highly in favor of it with the with the local administration, but he was on the he was on the Charter Review Commission, I think, at the time.
Louis Abrams,
remember Louis?
Right. Helped to get it on the agenda.
Yes.
So that,
yes.
that the review commission and Alan, you sit on that commission now.
I'm a member of that commission, and I feel free to talk about this today because Councilmember Chalk has pretty much removed this issue from the agenda of the Charter Review Commission, and that's fine with me. It's a matter that should be reviewed by the County Council, and I'm glad to see that Councilmember Chalk is heading a committee that's going to take a look at it. I don't have an investment in the outcome. I think it's where it should be.
We are extremely grateful too that Mason is going after this with his committee, and they're going up to an ICM meeting here in Seattle. I think it's the end of this month sometime.
Okay, now Glenn, again, who's this we you keep referring about? Is it a bunch of disgruntled anti folks on the North Shore, or is this an island-wide sentiment that you know isn't just limited to old guys that meet for coffee every Wednesday morning?
No, it's it's basically the Jimmy Trujillo group, okay?
Oh, no, I've been outed again.
Like you said, we're just nitpickers, that's all. I mean, we have no dog in this fight. Walter Lewis, the very learned retired lawyer, he helps us with the legal side of this all the time, whether it's legitimate to say this or to say that and everything. But Walter and Ken, we've had a pretty good group of people at that time. But as you know, Jimmy, you had to swim to keep the super ferry off the island. So it's not that easy. And there's only three ways of getting this on the ballot to get it up for a vote. And one is the easiest way, obviously, is if the council will go ahead and do it. And they need
that's right.
They need four votes to put the thing on there. The other way is by petition, which is a bear to go out and get thousands of names and stuff. And the other way is the Charter Review Commission. Well, the Charter Review Commission, obviously, is basically a mayor's pick people, and they're going to pretty much do his will. Not always. There's been a few mavericks on that thing.
Louis Abrams being one of them.
Yeah, I don't know that. I didn't even know that you were on the Charter Review Commission. But you know, we've hacked lines with the Charter Review Commission.
I understand that. And all I can say is that from the time the mayor appointed me to that commission, I've never had a conversation with him. He's never once tried to influence my thinking on anything. And I think that one of the things that needs to happen in this kind of debate is to separate how much of this relates to the incumbent and how much of it relates to the way the system is structured.
Well, Alan, we've been buried in these problems. Look at traffic, okay? We've been buried in these problems for at least, I've only been here 26 years. So during that period of time, I've just seen this thing exacerbate, just get worse and worse. Whether it's the Kilauea Gym up there that's had a leaky roof for 23 years.
That's a legendary problem that shouldn't have happened.
And Glenn, let's be fair about this, because we could blame traffic on so many things that is outside the purveyor of the mayor.
Oh, true.
But the Kilauea roof, or let's say our landfill, or a drug treatment center.
Or Pui Road.
Or Pui Road, there we go. And I know, and here I'll share my bias, is that I just feel like there's opportunity for us to make some structural changes that might be little changes that could make some big shifts for our community. One of the things that I would love to see as part of this shift in government would be voting our council members by district, and that we would have three at district positions. That would be 2-year terms, and then we'd have four at large, and those would be 4-year terms, and the top vote getter would be the grand poobah mayor chair and get to run the show. But you have a diverse body of seven that makes a decision for the community, as opposed to just one single person with a, you know, the select few that get to help that person make decisions. And, you know, it works or it doesn't work, but I think more often than not, we feel, our community at times, that it's not really working well.
Well, one thing to remember about Kauai is that if you look at the powers of mayors in Hawaii, we have, by charter, the least powerful mayor of the bunch. So you could make an academic argument, sure. I did in the piece, that the mayor's office on Kauai, and let's not, we're not talking about the incumbent, we're talking about the design of the system for the moment. You could make the argument that the mayor's office could be made more powerful to increase its effectiveness. Now, it's, I know, very difficult, if not impossible, to divorce your feelings about the incumbent from how you see the way the system is designed. But I think for purposes of this debate, we need to all try to do that.
Well, you raise a good point there, the mayor. But if we can get this manager type of government, they're going to have to work this thing out to show, because not the mayor and not the county manager can be responsible for something that he hasn't put the people in place.
He or she.
He or she. I'm sorry. Yes. And it can't happen that way. So they're going to have to make this decision. But you got a lot of options. And to say that we will not have a mayor anymore, that's wrong. The mayor is going to be one of those seven council members. He's going to be one of the people, possibly the chair, and he's going to be one of the seven votes on the thing, plus his other civic duties. He's not having those taken away from him. So it's not like you're going to have a no mayor in this thing.
But now
you stop the finger pointing between the mayor's office and the council. It's not our fault, it's the mayor. No, it's not the mayor's fault, it's the council. Back and forth, they keep getting the department heads to come over there to the council. I sit there every week listening to this thing. Today, who was it? Somebody from the department was supposed to be there. They asked for a thing about the low-income housing or something. No response came back. So this goes on and on. But if you got a county manager that the mayor now addresses, you have the problems given to him. He solves it in the most economic, the fastest way possible. And if he doesn't do it, you can fire him. You don't have to sit there for four years and impeach him or get him out of office. He's going to sit there.
Glenn, let's look at this issue of the naming of department heads and how that is the mayor's Kuleana.
Right.
What would be different in regards to having a county manager? Who's going to name those department heads? What would that look like?
Well, the biggest thing is the county manager is going to appoint department heads that are skilled, that have the qualifications to be there.
You hope.
Not because he happens to be a political buddy, that he happened to have been his campaign manager or something. That's going to stop.
That doesn't happen, does it?
You know who I'm talking about.
Sorry.
Jimmy.
Well, yeah, and I bring that up because that was one of the things that I didn't notice in the article, Alan, was that process of the mayor, whoever that is, then names the department heads. And then that department head then says, hey, folks, we're going to have a rally this afternoon and would really love for you guys to come on out and show your support for.
But the mayor doesn't name a number of the department heads. Now, I suspect that they're named by commissions. And now I'm sure that Glenn's rejoinder to that would be, well, the mayor appoints the members of the commissions.
Sure.
That's true. But if you are dissatisfied with an appointment that a commission makes, then the mayor has to replace all of his commissioners until he's got a vote that he's satisfied
with.
But
I think that's only two positions, chief of police.
No, it's...
Okay, fire, chief, and then planning. Who else?
Planning.
Liquor also.
Well, the liquor commission is selected.
He doesn't appoint water.
Well,
that's
he doesn't
the
appoint water,
commission.
Right? He doesn't appoint the fire, exactly.
So I wish I could remember what they all are.
We've got a civics lesson coming up for us.
Exactly. The fact is that the mayor is not the king of the hill in the literal sense. So, plus, one thing, Glenn, I'd love to hear your perspective on this, but we already have and have for a while, and the most recent the incumbent is Nadine Nakamura and Gary Hugh before her. We already have a sort
managing
of
managing director.
Excuse
that's
me?
Not a county manager.
A managing director, right?
It's not even close. They changed the name when Gary Hugh was in the same position. They changed it. I don't remember what his position was, but when Nadine got the job, she was chosen as a managing director. And again, that's, if you check and find out, that's not even close to what a county manager's duties are. She basically reports to the mayor, and, you know, she feeds him, he feeds her, but there's nothing neutral about that. With a county manager, you're trying to keep politics out of this thing. And, you know, politics cannot be completely kept out of everything, obviously. But at least you got a chance to find it out. Alan, what would you say? What is the problem of not at least trying the county manager system? It won't be set in stone. If it doesn't work, we'll go back to something else.
Well, I think that's easier said than done. First of all, we're talking about amending the charter.
Right.
We're talking
about... Walter Lewis has already pretty much done that. He did that back in 05, I guess.
Okay. So the situation would be it wouldn't get on the ballot until 2016.
Right.
It's almost inconceivable that the new system would go into effect before the current mayor's term ends in 2018.
That's true.
As a practical matter, you say, well, we could just try it for a while, but the expense and complexity of making this kind of fundamental shift in government is not something you should do as an experiment for 2 or 3 years. It's something that you should do if you're convinced it's actually going to work better than what we have. And
well, we have we have a template out there all over the United States, all over the world, in fact, of this working. More working than failures. There's far, far more. If you read the ICMA things about this, of course, they're the member of the association. They want as many as they can. Maui, right now, is far advanced over what we are. They feel we've been contacted. Councilman Chalk has been in close touch with the chair over there, and they feel they pretty much have the votes to be able to get this thing on.
Yeah, there's a movement over there that's gone quite a bit farther than what's happened here. That's absolutely true.
Exactly. Now, I think what Alan's point is, and correct me if I'm wrong, Alan, but this is a significant structural change, and we just don't want to be doing it willy-nilly. And I guess that's why I advocate, well, if we're going to do it, and I have confidence that we could do a better job than what we've got going now. I guess I'm just confident that the status quo is
not working.
Well, you know, I would say that it could work better, and a
exactly.
number of folks would agree to that. But I think we can look at some other issues as well, and that issue of districting. And I know, Alan, you shared that the Charter Review Commission is looking at that as potential another.
Yes, our agendas are public, our meetings are public, and on the agenda for this month's meeting, it's on the last Monday of every month, it will be a general preliminary discussion of, again, because this has been kicked around,
yes,
and
yeah.
been on the ballot, I believe, 3 times. We're going to talk about it again. That says nothing about where that discussion's going to go or whether there's going to be any result. But
term limits have been on that 2 or 3 times, right? And the people, I think the last one, I think it was about 2-1, wasn't it? They said no.
Yeah, well, they just went through it again. Frankly, you know, I got to say that the longer I live here, the more I recognize that this is right, that there are fundamental differences between small town rural politics and big city politics. And I'm not sure I would agree that term limits aren't a good idea in an environment like Kauai County. My whole voting life, I've opposed term limits, and particularly in California, where I thought at the state level, introduction of term limits had basically destroyed the effectiveness of state government. It's different here. And it's certainly different in a rural county. And one of the key differences, I think, that speak in favor of retaining a mayor system, Glenn, and I respect your perspective, and I'd be happy to hear your response. But
well, again, you know, we're not doing away with the mayor, right?
I know, but when it comes to going to talk to the legislature,
yeah,
an elected mayor who has the power, the array of powers that this one does, speaks a lot louder than a hired hand would. And even if the mayor was a member of the council, it still is not as, it's not as definitive a political voice as we currently have.
But you know that the mayor, what's his qualifications for the job. 30 years old and lived on Kauai for 2 years. A county manager is going to have a barrel of things that he's going to have qualifications to have this job. Would you rather have somebody that's more qualified, that knows what he's doing, or somebody just because of his popularity, that's why he's in there, like you mentioned about going to the legislature? So you have a county manager going to the legislature, making his pitch for whatever he was. But with his experience, wouldn't he have far better chance of gaining what we're looking for?
Glenn, I think that one of the things that somebody like our current mayor does is bring a lot of voters to the table. And I do think that our state legislators, while they're going to tell us that they have Kauai's interest in mind, they're also going to reckon the fact that this county manager isn't going to be bringing any political clout to the table, but the current mayor or that person that sits there with the department heads and all the UPW and HGA right. workers behind them, that's kind of a big block. I'm not saying that's right or wrong. I'm just suggesting that Alan's point, I think, is well taken, that currently the mayor offers a fair amount of girth, if you will, to push his agenda forward and get the support of our legislative team.
Well, that's very true, Jimmy. But again, if you got somebody there that's politicking, well, I say politicking because you're taking the politics out of it, but he's pushing to get an agenda
sure.
for Kauai that the people want, that's a betterment for the people, not because somebody wants to be popular, not because somebody wants to get reelected, for crying out loud, and needs that vote power. He's doing it just because the people really need it. They want it. It's better for the island.
You know, I hate to say this, Glenn, but I think there's, and don't take it the wrong way, but I think there's a kind of rose-colored glasses syndrome. I don't assume that the magical selection of a qualified county manager would somehow assure that a completely qualified, totally competent person who will not get entrenched, will not turn out to have the same kind of irresolvable problems, it isn't going to go that way. We're talking about human nature here, and I'm aware of many county managers that have become so entrenched in their jobs. This was particularly true in Los Angeles County, unfortunately.
I know, Bell, California, but that wasn't the manager, that wasn't the council. They were corrupt people. The system was okay, but then the citizens in those communities, like you pointed out, Bell, I mean, I've heard it over and over, the citizens didn't care where their money was going, so these guys took advantage of it.
Well, that's exactly right. And
but you don't really think that's going to happen here on Kauai. If you get a qualified manager that comes in here, like you said, we got a lot smaller municipality than some of these places. But if you talk to, if you really want to converse with somebody, get a hold of Ken Taylor, because he lived under this system for, I don't know, 35 or 40 years up in Santa Barbara. With they got a lot of counties up there besides Santa Barbara, and it worked, very well.
Go ahead, Alan.
Well, I thought it was important that we have a balanced conversation about this, and that's why I'm grateful to be talking to you today, Glenn, because this is the kind of discussion that needs to happen.
Well, I agree.
And it's a discussion that needs to talk about the strengths and weaknesses of both systems. And at the point that we've had that thorough conversation, then the voters can make a decision. And I'll tell you quite honestly, as a voter, I don't know how I would vote on this proposal if it came on the ballot next year to make this shift. I really don't at this point know how I would vote.
Well, like you said, we're not looking at this thing as a temporary Band-Aid for a ruptured artery or something. We're looking at it as a full-time, perpetual thing to do. But all I'm saying is, if for some reason it doesn't work out the way we feel it or want it to work, we can revert back to it. So it's not a, you know, it's not a, and as you're pointing out, it's no magic bullet. It's, but as Jimmy just said, if it improves anything, it would be worth it to take care of some of these festering problems, our landfill, for crying out, our solid waste program. We can't even, you know, we can't even find a place we want to put our trash any place. And, you know, again, the traffic problem and everything else, it's a combination of the state and our county. I mean, we keep on saying we're one island. We should be able to get together with the state on some of these things, like our roads and highways and stuff like this. We should be able to get together with them, but we're not doing it. But on the flip side that you're talking about, Alan, you know, we've got the administration fighting for their life, and I'm sure they're putting out their propaganda machine, you know, telling these people, you get a county manager, he could come in and fire you or you or you. That's not going to happen. You're not going to have a fire sale to get rid of everybody. You're going to have him investigating, find out where the problems happen to be, where maybe there's too much overlap, where one person could be doing three people's jobs or things like that. But that's not going to happen immediately anyway. But it's always been partial, like we found out in 2005 when we had these meetings, that they had 20 people to one of the public there.
Well, if that's how it went down, it shouldn't have gone down that way. There's no question about that.
Exactly.
I just hope, Glenn, that you're not overly optimistic. If I wasn't skeptical of what you say, I would simply say that I'm with you and I would vote your way if it came on the ballot. But I can't get there yet.
There we go. I want to just interject. We have another caller, Glenn. If you could hold off a second, caller, are you there,
Jimmy?
Hey, how's it going, Jimmy?
Yes. Aloha, Councilmember Mason Chalk. Thank you for joining us. We have about 3 minutes left of our show, and we've been talking about the county manager system. Can you share a little insight as to where we're at with this and what you see happening next?
Well, you know, first I just want to thank the two callers for their interest, and I think, you know, we definitely want to have this conversation at the council level. We've all said that it's worth having, because it's worth looking at, always looking at how to improve government.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, my objective is to have an objective conversation about it, about the things that we struggle with, which include transparency, accountability, efficiency, and continuity. And with those conversations, my hope is that we can get a better system out of it.
Sure.
And I'm going to hold this above our heads until we do.
Well, I certainly hope you're right. I think you are right that having the conversation is really the important thing right now.
And Mason, thank you, Mason, for taking this bull by the horns. You know, the other time around in 2005, we couldn't get anybody like you, but with you and Mel and Kipukai and Aaron Conishiro, you know, we feel that we've really moved in upper level compared to where we were before. So I really appreciate that, Mason.
Well, thanks. And I want to balance that with just saying that, you know, I appreciate where Mr. Parkini is coming from. It is an enormous task, and everyone should understand that the complexity of the questions that need to be answered, you know, are going to be ongoing. And so, you know, basically this subcommittee, everyone is aware of, is really wanting to get information to start the framework of what that would look like, and not make any assumptions or decisions for the council, but really go down the road of understanding, if we do this, what's going to happen here.
So this is like
a
joint fact-finding group.
Well, what Councilmember Chalk describes is really the best way this could go, and I am impressed with his sincerity on this issue.
Absolutely.
I know he's not blowing smoke here, and I wish the committee's efforts the best, and I hope that you folks get into this thoroughly enough to really have a well-informed, well-detailed recommendation to make.
And Councilmember Chalk, we've got to go. Your last final thoughts and words on this, and how can we stay involved?
Well, you know, I heard Glenn talk about us going up and meeting some of these municipalities. I'm focused on the ones that are working right, because I want to know what's the secret, because we know that any system is a system. And while there may be a better structure for us to follow that might get the outcomes we're looking for, it's really about people. And so I want to see what they're doing and if it's implementable in the NA system, because I think that's what we're looking for, is some solid outcomes. Well, thanks for your time.
Thank you. We appreciate you joining us here on Out of the Box. It's unfortunate that we're at the end of our show. Alan, thank you for joining us last minute. We'll have you back again, I hope. And Glenn Mickens, thank you for calling us on the phone. And we will have in 2 weeks another opportunity to do likewise, as well as on Tuesday, Felicia and her Kauai Soapbox. And next week we will have Jonathan Jay with local correspondent John Lettman talking a little bit about the situation in the Pacific with our expanding military presence. This has been a wonderful two-hour program. Mahalo to Cap Brady and Blue Dukes for joining us and talking about prison reform. All of you out there, stay dry. Remember, we are under a flash flood watch, and the wet weather is starting on the North Shore, and hopefully will be keeping us well-watered but not flowing downstream as things are wont to do.
Well said.
There we go. So a little house business before Dove comes in to evolve some more with us here on the station that loves you, Kauai Community Radio.
KKCR listens to you. If you'd like to make comments or provide feedback regarding our programming, or to suggest programming you'd like to hear, go to kkcr.org, click on the contact link, and take our listener survey. Or send us a letter at KKCR, P.O. Box 825, Hanalei, Hawaii 96714. Kauai Community Radio, listening to you.
The Mali'e Foundation presents the annual Kauai Mokihana Festival. The festival begins on Sunday, September 20th at 10 a.m. at the Kapa'a First Hawaiian Church. Monday is the Kauai Composers Contest and Concert. Tuesday is the Youth Eo e Lili'u Competition at Kauai Memorial at 9 a.m. Wednesday is the Hawaiian Cultural Presentation at Grand Hyatt Kauai Resort and Spa from 5 to 7 p.m. Thursday, solo and group Kahiko Ne Hula Competition, and Friday is the group Awana Hula Competition with the Royal Court, both at the Kauai Beach Resort at 6 p.m. The festival ends on Saturday with the Solo Awana Hula Competition and Festival Awards finale at the Kauai Beach Resort at noon. 2015 is the year of Na Vai Ola, Living Waters. Tickets are available at Vicky's Fabrics, Kauai Beach Resort, Kauai Music and Sound, or at malieefoundation.org, M-A-L-I-E foundation.org. More info at 652-4497.
Aloha, I'm John Gordon for KKCR News. Here's a county council report for the week of September 7th. There will be a council committee meeting Wednesday at 8:30 a.m. in the council chambers in Lihue. Here's some highlights from the agenda. The Budget and Finance Committee has three bills on their agenda. They all involve the county's budget, and a public hearing was held on the bills on September 2nd. The first is Bill 2593, amending a county ordinance relating to the operating budget of the county for the fiscal year July 1, 2015 through June 30, 2016, by revising the amounts estimated in the General Fund, Highway Fund, Liquor Fund, Solid Waste Fund, Sewer Fund, and Golf Fund. This is the Units 2, 3, and 4 collective bargaining increases in the amount of $912,369. The second is Bill 2594, amending a county ordinance relating to the operating budget of the county for the fiscal year July 1, 2015 through June 30, 2016, revising Section 19 of the operating budget provisos. And the third is Bill 2595, amending a county ordinance relating to the operating budget of the county for the fiscal year July 1, 2015 through June 30, 2016, revising the amounts estimated in the general fund, and this is for the Kauai Police Department legal analyst, for the amount of $124,165. Also, Council Chair Kagawa requests the Director of Finance and the Housing Director discuss the county's long-term affordable rental tax limit, including but not limited to discussion of the following. Aloha, I'm John Gordon for KKCR News. Here's affordable rental tax limit, including but not limited to discussion of the following. An overview of the Department of Housing and Urban Development's median household income and affordable rental rates. How affordable rental rates and median household income are calculated. the potential impact to the county should the current tax limit be increased from 80% to 100%, and finally, all other related information to the long-term affordable rental tax limit. For more information, visit the county's website at www.kauai.gov. To view meetings or meeting archives, visit www.kauai.gov/webcast meetings. Till next week, I'm John Gordon for KKCR News. Aloha, and I hope Menace stays away.